For more information on Ancient Dragon Zen Gate, please visit our website at www.ancientdragon.org. Our teachings are offered to the community through the generosity of our supporters. To make a donation online, please visit our website.
Even unsurpassed, profound, and wondrous Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas. Now I can see and hear it, accept and maintain it. May I unfold the meaning of the Tathagata's truth.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Good morning.
So it's an interesting morning here in Chicago. Very mild. The rain has stopped. It's raining through the night. And for those of you who are new, I'm Taigen Leighton, your guiding teacher at Ancient Dragon Zen Gate. And we're in the middle of a practice commitment period, talking about the teachings of a particular teacher, Hongzhi Zhongzhui was his name in Chinese, from a book I did, Cultivating the Empty Field, some of his teachings. He was 1091 to 1157, there will not be a test, but he was in the 12th century the foremost teacher in the Shaodong Chinese or Soto Japanese lineage, very important in our tradition, which goes back way back to the 800s, up to Dogen, who brought it from China to Japan in the 1200s, a century after Hongzhi, and I referenced Hongzhi quite a lot. And then Suzuki Roshi brought it from Japan to California in the 1960s. I want a little bit of review about Hongzhi's teaching. Again, we've been talking about Hongzhi and his teachings through the practice period. And just as a very, very brief review, some of the major themes we've been talking about include returning to the source. And this is very important in our practice. It's about finding or realizing or communing with the fundamental source right now. Not some historical source, but that everything is arising right now, thanks to dependent co-arising, and all of us and everybody we've ever known is part of who we are in the seed. So Hongzhi talks about our practice when we sit formally, when we face the wall, when we face ourselves, is about returning to the source, or what he calls the empty field. So that's kind of that sense that we get, that we feel is sustains us in practice of wholeness, of communion with something deeper, with awakening that's always here. That's the starting point, in a way. And then Hongzhi also talks about the Buddha work, that even though Buddha is always here, we have work to do. Talks about that a lot, and so does Dogen. Hongzhi particularly uses nature metaphors and poetic expression to talk about the naturalness of this awakening. He also talks about the ancestors, which I will be speaking more about, the lineage going back to, in time, but also ancestors right now, ancestors in the future. Hongzhi says, all beings are your ancestors. So all beings, everywhere, including in the future, combine to produce this situation of our being here right now. And then he also talks about responding to the world, and that's what I want to talk about today. That having some sense of ultimate universal reality, that Hongzhe talks about how we respond then to the situations of the world, to our own discomfort, to our own pains, to the people around us, to our world. So Hongzhe in the practice instructions of cultivating the empty field speaks about response or responding almost 24 times. I'm not going to read all of them, but I want to read some of them to give a sense of what he means by response. So, for example, he says, people with the bottom of the bucket fallen out, people who've let go of attachments to ego and to our usual ideas about the world, immediately find total trust. So this practice is in many ways about faith, not faith in something somewhere up in the sky or some particular dogma or teaching, but trust just in this reality here now and in ourselves. So people with the bottom of the bucket falling out immediately find total trust. So we are told simply to realize mutual response and explore mutual response, then turn around and enter the world. So we commune with this ultimate reality, this universal reality, through our sustained zazen practice. But then the point of that isn't to reach some higher state or whatever. It's not about self-improvement, although we all each do benefit from this practice. But it's about seeing, the Bodhisattva vows we'll chant later, our connection to all beings and our commitment to respond to the suffering of the world, the suffering of the people around us, the suffering on our own seat when we are sitting. And this comes up even more when we do a longer sitting, as we will at the end of next month to close this practice period for 3 days. So, we have these ingrained habitual responses, conditioned responses, that get in the way of our communing with the source, communing with reality, and responding freely to be helpful. In the Song of the Jhulmer Samadhi, we sometimes chant from Dongshan, who was in the 800s and the founder of this Soto lineage. It says, drumming and singing begin together, which could also be interpreted as inquiry and response come up together. So, in some ways, when there is some situation of difficulty, there's a response right there. It may be difficult to realize, to get a hold of, but there's always a response available. And that's up to us. We have a responsibility. We have an ability to respond. And how we do that is tricky, difficult, challenging. But this is our practice in the world. So I want to read some more of Hongzhe's statements about response. He says, the deep source, transparent down to the bottom, can radiantly shine and can respond unencumbered to each speck of dust without becoming its partner. We can respond to each aspect of the conditioned world, each of our problems and hang-ups. We can respond without getting caught by it. So without becoming its partner, without becoming entrapped and engaged with all the difficulties around us and within us. Still, we can respond. So, just reading some more of these, Hongzhe says, the central pivot turns, the gateway opens you accord and respond without laboring and accomplish without hindrance. So this central pivot, Hongzhe and Dogen talk about in various ways. Sometimes they call it the jade pivot. And it's this seeing, I could say two sides, but there are many sides, but seeing our conditioning, the ways in which we are caught by our usual sense of separation, that there's beings out there, there's me here. We all have this, it's in our language, subject, verb, object. We think there are objects out there that we sometimes think we can manipulate or take advantage of or whatever. Or we might think that there are subjects out there that are verbing us. It's very deep in us. It's in our language. It's in our ingrained consciousness to feel this sense of separation or duality or, us and them, me and you, whatever. And yet what Hongzhe and Dogen and the Buddha taught is that there's this pivot, that we can see the conditioned world, and we can also, and this benefits from sustained zazen practice. We have a sense of the universal reality, of the wholeness of reality, that we are part of that, that we are together with all beings as we respond. So there's this turning, this pivot. Sometimes I used to think of it as a switch. I could switch on. Oh yeah, there it is. Everything's wonderful. And then, come back to, oh, there's all these problems. Both are reality. This goes way back in Buddhism. The two truths of universal and phenomenal reality. So to continue with more of what Hongzhe says about this response. And I'm not going to read all of the things he says, but realize the subtlety of how to eliminate the effects of the swirling flow of arising and extinction. Everything is changing, arising and falling. And we can get caught in the flow of that, swirling flow. But Hongzhe says, rely on the source of creation. Again, the source of creativity, right now. It's not a source from somewhere else or for some time else, some when else. Rely on the source of creation. Trust yourself. And pay attention. He continues, if you feel a shadow of a hair's gap, nothing will be received. Just experience and respond appropriately. Just experience our experience and respond appropriately. So this goes back to a saying by a slightly later contemporary of Dongshan in the 800s or so, and Yunnan, who was one of the great Zen teachers, who was asked, what is the teaching of a Buddhist whole lifetime? And he said immediately, an appropriate response. So our practice in the world is how do we respond appropriately to the situation at hand? And this takes paying attention, it takes trial and error. We make mistakes. It's important to make mistakes. Hopefully we make right mistakes rather than harmful mistakes. But we learn and we develop our ability to respond appropriately, which Yunnan said was the heart of Buddha's practice, of the Buddha work. So again, Hongzhe says, just experience and respond appropriately. From this singular impact, many thousands of roads open, and all things are preeminent. So we can see all the events of the world together, coming up together. All the events of our life, our whole life. With this unification, I really only speak the Dharma consciousness. So we have to, there's this pivot, and there's also, how do we bring it all back home? How do we feel what we feel? How do we acknowledge our feelings changing? How do we respect all the beings so-called out there? How do we, one of our 16 basic precepts is to benefit all beings. This doesn't mean just Buddhists or just Chicagoans or, you know, whatever. How do we respect and benefit all beings? This is a great challenge, of course, in our world, where there's so much division. So, some more from Hongzhe. Dignified without relying on others and radiant beyond doubt. Maintain this as primary. The energy turns around and transforms all estrangement. So if we give our energy to this inner dignity, beyond doubt, Omja says, our energy can turn around and transform all of the ways in which we feel estranged from each other in the world. I think this feels very idealistic in our world now, but this is how the practice of connecting to the source expresses itself in our lives, in this world, in this difficult world. So Hongzhi continues, passing through the world, responding to situations, illumination is without striving and functions without leaving traces. This is a great Zen ideal. So that the illumination, you know, there is the practice of effort and striving to just be here, to show up in our life for each other, for ourselves, in the world. And sometimes it feels like a great effort. But Hongzhi is saying that when we settle into this, illumination is without striving and functions without leaving traces. So this functioning is important too. Dogen later talked about Dharma positions. We each have our own Dharma position. We each have our own situation. How do we function? How do we take care of what we is, how we is? Together, and each of us have this ability to respond, this responsibility. So our activity, our expression, our functioning. Again, Hongzhi talks about creativity, and I would say that this is a creative practice. We're all sitting here in a Zendo, or those of you out in the Zoom world, but there's the Buddha I'm facing on our altar, and we are all sitting like Buddha in this body, each of us. Separately and together. So Sangha is this wonderful situation of doing this together. Doing our best to function together like this. Hopefully. Appropriately. So I'm just going to read through some more of these statements by Hongzhi. Able to be serene and able to know. Here you can walk securely. The jade vessel turns over on its side and at once dispenses energy for you to return, share yourself, and respond to the world. So this situation of sitting upright, and the sustained practice of sitting upright, of being upright in our body mind, is a kind of vessel, a kind of container for the ultimate and the phenomenal. And I was talking about the jade pivot Here he says the jade vessel turns over on its side and at once dispenses energy for us to return out to the world, out to our lives. Share yourself and respond to the world. Elsewhere he says, essentially you exist inside emptiness and have the capacity to respond outwardly without being annoyed, like spring blossoming, like a mirror reflecting forms. So elsewhere, Pongsha talks a lot about spring and spring blossoming, and Dogen talks about this, the blossom returning onto the withered branch, it's the same withered branch as last year. And here we are in spring. There are many blossoming trees here in Chicago. It's lovely, and it's energy arising in each of us as we respond to the world. Pongsha also says, accept your function and be wholly satisfied. In the entire place, you are not restricted. The whole time, you still mutually respond. So he talks about responding in terms of mutual response. We respond to the world and the world responds to us. We express ourselves in the world. The world expresses itself to us. Accept your function, again, accept your dharma position, accept your situation. We all have our particular combination of difficulties and problems. From our experience of, you know, our lifetime this time, we could also talk about our ancestors and this accepting our function as a product of, you know, dependent co-arising includes not just our spiritual ancestors, our genetic ancestors, our cultural ancestors, all the people we may revere who have given us wonderful examples in music, in art, in literature, in responding to difficulties in the world. How do we receive all of it? And pay attention. And it doesn't mean that we have to be, you know, in some kind of military strict attention. It's gentle. Just sitting, paying attention, facing the world. Thoughts and feelings arise. We let them go. And then they come up again in the next few minutes. And we sit through the sky and the clouds passing by. And we each have our particular way. Each of us has our own way of being Buddha. I can't tell any of you how to be Buddha. This is something we have to find for ourselves. Teachers and teachings can be helpful, of course. And the forms that we use to harmonize together in the Zendo can be helpful. But basically, you know, we sit facing the wall, facing ourselves, allow energy and dignified response to arise, accept our function, accept the situation you're in this life, in this world, with all its difficulties and with all its wonders and all its joys. And with all, I was talking last week about, Pongsha talking about romping and playing in samadhi. In this settling, there is a playfulness. How do we play with our situation? How do we allow the play of reality to be present? So some more Hongzhi's teaching about responding. He says, emptying one's sense of self-existence is wondrous. So we all have this sense of ourself as ego that we maybe needed to develop to reach adulthood, but emptying that out, emptying our sense of self-existence, seeing how we are deeply connected with everything, is wondrous. This wonder is embodied with a spirit that cannot be enacted we can express this wonder. And then he has this nature image. The moon mind with its cloud body is revealed straightforwardly in every direction without resorting to signs or symbols. We don't have to define or get a hold or grasp things. Everything is just arising as itself together. And we are part of that. It says, radiating light everywhere. It responds appropriately to beings and enters the sense dust without confusion. So, how do we respond appropriately? How do we study appropriate response and, recognize when some response, some effort we make is inappropriate or doesn't work or isn't helpful? This is all part of this effort and this joy to just be present and whole in our life and in our world. So I'm going to talk about some of the difficulties of this right now. But a little bit more from Hongzhi first. This is in a passage called Graciously Share Yourself. Moving straight ahead, totally let go. I would say letting go is the basis of our practice. Letting go, not holding on, not grasping. Of course, sometimes we do get grabbed onto things. But then, how do we let go? We may grab on again in the next moment, but how do we let go? Moving straight ahead, totally let go, washed clean and ground to a fine polish. Respond with brilliant light in such unfathomable depths. The water of autumn, waters of autumn, or the moon stamped in the sky. I love that expression. It's not how we usually think of the moon. It's certainly not in our modern scientific world. The moon is stamped in the sky, but it kind of looks like that sometimes, right? How to respond with brilliant light to such unfathomable, ungraspable depths as the waters of autumn or the moon stamped in the sky. With 100 grass tips in the busy marketplace, graciously share yourself. So this isn't about figuring out how to be helpful. It's just share what you is. Share your function. Graciously share yourself. Wide open and accessible, walking along, casually mount the sounds and straddle the colors while you transcend listening and surpass watching. So Hongzhi talks a lot about perception. Maybe that should be another theme that I mention as some of the major themes. How to respond, how to perceive without being caught by sense objects. That includes thoughts, because in Buddhism, mind and thoughts are like a sense object. How do we not get caught? And of course we do get caught, but then how do we let go? So he says, perfectly unifying in this manner is simply what sincere practitioners' appropriate activity. So how do we respond appropriately? So this is difficult because we know that there are all kinds of challenges in our world. And I think responding appropriately includes, of course, responding to the people around us, to our family, to our friends, responding to each other in Sangha, trying to be helpful. Trying to feeling our ability to be responsible to all in the world. But now I feel like I need to say something that is difficult to talk about. And this is about responding to what's happening now and all the student encampments on university campuses and what's in the genocide happening in Gaza. So I'm only speaking for myself. I'm not speaking for Ancient Dragon. I'm not speaking for Soto Zen. I'm not speaking for Buddhism. But just my response. So what's happening in Gaza is just horrific. The worst thing that's happened in my lifetime. And of course, there have been other genocides and other wars. And as far as we know, there have been wars and difficulties throughout human history. I kind of question that. I think there have been times of peace. But at any rate, in Gaza, the Israeli army has been bombing and targeting hospitals, obliterating hospitals, schools, refugee camps, aid trucks trying to bring aid into people who are in enforced famine. And I've been feeling I need to say something about this. And bombs and snipers have targeted intentionally doctors, hospital patients, students, scholars, journalists. This has been happening since the horrible attack by Hamas on October 7th, which was horrible. So I want to try and find my appropriate response, but part of that is to congratulate and appreciate all the students in peace encampments in universities all around the country. I heard that there were 40, maybe more by now. And this started a week or so ago at Columbia University, where I went to school, and I was part of, as some of you know, protests against the Vietnam War and against racism in Columbia in 1968. And we occupied the buildings for a week. 700 of us were arrested at the end of that week. And I've been talking about what's going on in the Middle East and Gaza with a number of friends who are veterans of that peace struggle, including Alan Sanaki, who our friend who's the abbot of Berkeley Zen Center and was arrested there, as I was, and is recovering miraculously from, I don't know if it was 6 weeks, he was in a coma for a good while at the end of the year. Anyway, good things can happen. He's still physically hampered, but he's cognitively all there. He sends emails, even. We have phone conversations. Anyway, we've been talking about this, and we kind of agree that what the students are doing now, they're smarter than we were. Because they've asked for people to participate in these encampments to be nonviolent in their actions, and also in their speech. It's so hard to talk about any of this now. This is part of the problem. Right speech, kind speech, are basic Buddhist teachings. These students have required for people in their encampments not to get involved in harsh rhetoric. I mean, some of that's happening, of course. It's difficult. People don't feel passionate about what's going on. And, you know, one of the basic Buddhist teachings is how do we deal with our passions? How do we respond appropriately to passions? But again, what's happening in Gaza, it's just terrible. So I really want to congratulate all the students who are in encampments and universities around the country. There's one up the road in Northwestern, in Evanston, where I live. I don't know if there's anything at the University of Chicago, but many schools, there's these peace encampments. The great Bodhisattva said, give peace a chance. And there have also been violent responses by by the powers that be in our government and in our university, who police have been called in and there have been violent responses to protesting students. At Emory University in Atlanta and one of the schools in Boston and elsewhere. So what's going on in Gaza is not real readily available to hear about in our mainstream mass media or in a lot of it. But these students know about it. And there's this enforced famine. I hesitate to say some of the things that I know about. Aid trucks, again, trying to get food and resources into the people in Gaza that have been bombed by Israel, potential. Many, many children have lost limbs. Most of the buildings and infrastructure in Gaza have been bombed, obliterated. And some universities have been trying to have open dialogue, and it's difficult. People have strong feelings on all kinds of sides. So, I just had to say something about this. Just an example, the one that got me, and this is from a month ago in North Gaza, so I'm going to say it, and some of you are going to have nightmares about this, and I'm sorry, but this is what's happening in our world. People in North Gaza were surviving by eating stray cats and dogs, because there was no food, no water, no sewage. And those stray cats and dogs were surviving by eating the corpses of people on the streets. That image is gone. So this is happening in our world now, and I'm so grateful to all of the university students around the country who are responding by trying to have peaceful encampments and calling attention to this. So what is an appropriate response in such times? It's hard to know. I'm trying to respond by just talking about it. And of course, the powers that be at schools and in politicians and Washington and states are saying this is about anti-Semitism. So I should say, for those of you who don't know, that I've talked about this, my ethnicity is 100% Eastern European Jewish. Passover was last week. That was my favorite holiday growing up. It celebrates freedom from slavery. And working for those oppressed, whatever ethnicity or religion they are. So I have to say, personally, I'm deeply offended when people say that any criticism of the state of Israel is anti-Semitic. To say that is anti-Semitic. So, you know, this principle of appropriate response that Hongzhe talks about, and Dogen talks about, and Kiyoshi talked about, how do we respond appropriately? And it's not easy. We can get confused by all the difficulties in the world. What is an appropriate response? So, you know, I felt I had to say something today because of all the university students, some of whom have been suspended or expelled or lost their housing or been beaten up by police brutally because they wanted to represent peace. But somehow, the history of the Middle East is so complicated. And without going into any of that, just, it's a difficult situation. How do we, so permanent ceasefire would be a good starting point. So I'm speaking about this in celebration of young students today who are trying to speak out for peace. That's at considerable risk often. I'll close by reading again this statement from Tonga. Moving straight ahead, totally let go, washed clean and ground to a fine polish, respond with brilliant light to such unfathomable depths as the waters of autumn or the moon stamped in the sky, and respond with brilliant light to all of the difficulties and conflicts and dualities in our world. When we settle into sitting, we can feel the wholeness of things. We can feel the awakeness of things. We can celebrate that. We can try and share that just in our everyday activity. So I'm not telling you to go up to Northwestern and join me, but if you want to, go ahead. Anyway, Hongzhi continues, with the 100 brass tips in the busy marketplace, graciously share yourself. It's a wonderful expression. Respond with open and accessible, wide open and accessible, walking along casually, mount the sounds and straddle the colors while you transcend listening and surpass watching. Don't get caught up in all the phenomena, but pay attention, pay attention. And paying attention is not just paying attention to the people around us, although it is that, paying attention to our own difficulties as we sit upright, breathing, inhaling and exhaling. Pay attention to all the difficulties, also in our world. And, our world is getting more conflicted, more difficult. So, in some ways, it's hard not to pay attention, but pay attention, and you can pay attention in a way that works for you. I know people who titrate their attention to news, and that might be a good thing. Don't do more than you can do. Hongzhi concludes, perfect light, perfectly unifying in this manner is simply a sincere practitioner's appropriate activity. So we see the difficulties of the world. We think about how to respond appropriately. And again, I just want to express my gratitude to young people, students all around our country who are trying to speak up for peace. Okay, we have some time. And I think because there's temple cleaning this afternoon for all of us, we won't have a temple cleaning period right after this. So, comments, questions, responses. And this is difficult to talk about. But feel free, please. You don't have to agree with my personal opinions. So, comments. Yes, Bo.
I really appreciate you addressing, and bringing up Gaza, because, ironically, maybe while I was sitting, and even parts of your Dharma talk, I apologize, but
it's all right.
In my head, yesterday I read something that someone posted on social media, of course, that got me passionate, got me angry regarding Gaza, the situation there. And so, since I read that, I've been sort of, I'm not going to respond because I don't think personally, that's not helpful for me in a social media context. But still, I've been compelled to kind of like compose a response in my head to this. And so I appreciate the recommendation or Hongzhi's this idea of responding to our passion, you know. And I know you're not saying like passion is bad, right? Like we have passions, right. We have anger, you know, and in a situation like this, I think that's very natural. But then, you know, so acknowledging it and then how to respond to it or how to use the energy of it for that light. I just think that you know, a beautiful response or a light, you know, a response that's like brings light into a situation, however that might, you know, manifest. But, you know, and response to passion sort of implies taking a moment at least or a breath to, to, you know, not react and rather sort of respond. So I appreciate that, you know, you are addressing this difficult, you know, whether people are acknowledging or not, it's like, we're all thinking about it, right? Like we're all in it. So, yeah, I appreciate and have gratitude for you to, you know, to address it.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And one thing you said, I meant to say that we have that to respond rather than react. So we all have habit patterns of reacting positively, negatively, in all kinds of ways to situations and circumstances. And one of the great benefits and joys of sustained Zazen practice is that we have the capacity to breathe, to enjoy our breath, to inhale and exhale. And, you know, when you feel some reaction coming up, it's a good idea to stop and take a breath or three, you know. But also, whatever it is that allows us to have some reaction is something that we can respond to. And sometimes, you know, there's this Buddhist practice, this bodhisattva practice of patience. And this is not passive. It's a dynamic practice to pay attention to what's happening. Sometimes we don't see anything to do that's helpful. And that's okay. But we continue to pay attention. And when there is some possibility of a helpful response, we have this responsibility. So thank you, Bob. Other comments? Anything? Questions?
Responses? I need to come back.
Hi, Irene. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm talking about that. I'm from Ukraine, and all my family lives in the cities from Panama. And about acceptance, so when I told them, I'm more angry than they are being there. So they say, like, I was worried about them, I tried to help them, but they're saying, as for the war, they're okay.
I'm so glad. But,
my
yeah.
nephew, who is like 22, every time I call him, he's like, I'm feeling from the city that was shelled 3 years every single day.
Mm.
And he's like, I'm perfect. I'm like, okay, what can I say, you know? So they live in like complete acceptance what's gonna happen. So like a couple of months ago, the missile struck right by their restaurant where he works, and nobody even knew. And people just stay in the restaurant, the cooks were cooking, serving and everything. If it's not right there in that restaurant that they were sitting, people don't react anything. So it's like full acceptance.
Thank you, Irene, and welcome. Gosh, yeah, it is possible in the middle of a war zone even to find patience and settledness and how to respond. So, yeah, and in some ways we're all in the middle of a war zone, but of the world. But of course, people in Ukraine now, I so sympathize. People in Gaza and in Israel sympathize with all sides. Maybe I should have added that I totally understand the genetic fear of Jews after centuries and centuries of pogroms and Nazi Holocaust, and so I understand how Israeli people are fearful. And yet, this horrible overreaction. Anyway, thank you for your testimony. Anybody else online or in the room? Jan?
I want to say that I...
loud enough for people
I am really chagrined that the Israeli people are carrying, or the Israeli army is carrying out this this action against the Palestinians. But it is not the worst thing that has happened in my lifetime.
Okay.
And I was 9 years old when World War II ended, and that was when I found out about the deaths of, I think, several million Jews. Well, did that also include people that were in Jehovah's Witnesses and other dissidents? And I don't
know.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. But it has to have been 3 or 4 million at least of just Jewish people. And so when I hear people say never again, I wonder, because my mind goes back to all of the violence that people have carried out against one another, starting before the ancient Greeks, who knows? And I just have no solution. My opinion is that fully evolved humans are not going to be warlike. And my prime example of this is Dr. Farmer. I feel like he was the most fully evolved human I've ever heard of. But my own personal experience with this whole situation is that I get involved in small groups of people where I'm thinking of one group where I'm involved that involves six people, maybe five, it's five. And one of these people is Orthodox, and they are really offended by going to every single meeting where every single person is against what the Israeli army is doing. In order to have cohesiveness in our little group of five, I stand up for this person.
Good.
Well, I don't know. You know, it's very difficult because I really am... I have to say the word I'm going to use again is I'm deeply chagrined that the Israelis have not decided that never again applies to what they're doing. But what I really care about is the cohesiveness of our little group of five. That's what's in front of me right now today. And so I vote with her. I wanted to say them, but now we know it's a woman. I vote with them, and I stand up for them. And I feel like I can do this without approving of what the Israeli army is doing. I'm very much against what they're doing. I think the story about the stray dogs and cats that were eating corpses and then in turn got eaten by living people, I don't think that's even unusual, especially during the siege of Warsaw or other situations that happened in World War II. I had a teacher that came back from World War II and was talking about people starving, and someone said, well, why didn't they eat the dogs and cats? And he said they'd already been eaten. And so that was just when I was in the sixth grade. And so it's a universal historical problem. And today I read a history of why the students are being attacked on campuses. And it was a short history that went only back to American slavery and the formation of police. And another thing I just wanted to say is, in Chicago, we used to call it a police riot when the Democratic Convention was attacked, when the protesters at the Democratic Convention were attacked by the police. The newspaper said, oh, it's a police riot. It's still a police riot, but they don't name it that anymore. And they should. Anyway, I'm done.
Thank you, Jan, for your testimony. Appreciate it. And yeah, it's not about saying so-and-so is evil or bad or, you know, how do we include everyone? This is so difficult, but thank you. Mm-hmm. And I'm younger than you. My lifetime only started 5 years after the end of World War II. But it occurred before you saw the picture, so.
Well, I was already born when World War II started.
Yeah.
I don't remember that, but I do remember the end of
right.
it.
Right, sure, sure. Brian, you had your hand up?
Yeah, I find myself asking about this appropriate response. if Netanyahu and Israel Defense hadn't chosen the response that they have, which is so destructive as you described it, what would have been an appropriate response to October 7th? What would be an appropriate response to the hundreds of miles of tunnels where Hamas operates and what they do and what they plan and what they still want to do to Israeli people? What is an appropriate response? And I don't think it's enough to say ceasefire. I mean, then what? And what do you do as a government to protect your people? Do you just say, well, we're going to be nice to Palestinians and hope that Hamas will disappear? I don't think they're going to. And what if you're going to engage in some kind of violence against your enemy who is out to destroy you? What is an appropriate form of violence? Or is it? Should you just go away? Leave the Middle East? You know, go back to the diaspora? Again, I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I'm troubled by thinking that an appropriate response is to say ceasefire and then let's stop talking about it.
Oh, no, we can't stop talking.
What would be the appropriate response? What would you do if you were in Netanyahu's position about Hamas?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not in his position. I know that there have been at times, but the history of the Middle East is so complicated, even just in modern times. So yeah, thank you, Brian. This is really difficult. And there may be many appropriate responses. And it's not easy. It's a difficult one. I want to go back to something, though, and I saw Dale's hand up, but I want to go back to something Jan said, that humans have to evolve so that we can have peace in the world. And I think that is the essential work of sanghas, of zazen, of our doing this practice, is that is to pay attention and see all sides. So I really appreciate what you said, Brian. And to try and find peaceful response and productive response and caring response that includes everyone. That's the big challenge. But our practice of paying attention to ourselves, you know, this is what we can do, paying attention to our own patterns of anger and reaction and grasping and feeling what we feel, not to run away from ourselves, not to run away from the difficulties of the world, to just sit and be with it. So thank you, Janet. Thank you, Brian. Dale?
Matthew has been waiting patiently for
Matthew
some time.
Well, Matthew first and then Dale.
As the past comments have come, I don't know that I add to it. I realize I'm wanting to ask another variation of how we sit with polarization or how we speak in those places. Just, I went to graduate school at Kent State, where every year as the anniversary rolls around, the local newspapers are flooded with letters by locals. I was there during the first years of the invasion of Iraq in the early 2000s. By older residents attempting to remind the students that this is what students deserve who are disloyal to the country. And I think of in my graduate program, we had a period very early on where some of our students were very angry about, you know, often based on rumor, just of whether or not different faculty had used the word genocide specifically. I had a conversation with some of my students saying, you know, at the end of the day, genocide is a legal term. Does it matter if someone says atrocity and discussing it versus genocide? Like, are they acknowledging and are we talking about violence and we end violence? And even just the reference to October 7th, where, I mean, as I learn about it and I'd read about it, it feels like Hamas leadership wanting to put more neutral Palestinians in a place of total war. It's a helter-skelter like move, and what do we do when all the forces are pushing for be as radical as possible? I feel like you know, Dogen's response to Nenshin's cat of saying, "Well, I put my sandal on my head and I walk out the door." Like, what do you do when the responses are filtered by a call for polarization and everything is read through that lens?
Thank you. Yes. What do we do? The people who, people in the government talk about proportional response and rather than, well, I think that there are international organizations who say that what is happening in Gaza is by definition genocide. It used to be the war. I mean, I think some wars in our history were not involved in massacring civilians. But that's another one. It's difficult. I don't have solutions by any means. Dale?
I cannot sit here and say nothing. I think you're all wrong and you're all right. This is...
Can you speak up? I don't know if people online can hear.
I think everything I've heard feels wrong and right, too. It's just not simple, and it's extremely simple, and it's not simple at all, and it's extremely simple. I went to... Bernie Glassman had the Auschwitz retreat of Zen Peacemakers in 2015, and we sat and meditated and working out in Auschwitz.
Can you hear him online?
I sat at Birkenau and Auschwitz and meditated with Bernie Glassman and Zen peacemakers. And I am a 100% Ashkenazi Jew, like Tachin. And my family was torn apart by this. My daughter wants to protest, and the debates about what is anti-Semitic and what isn't is being grossly oversimplified. I think the Jewish people have been tremendously traumatized, and people who are terribly traumatized, like victims of domestic abuse, sometimes it feels like they're justified in murdering their abuser. And it's like at this particular moment in history, I feel like, in our history that's changing from moment to moment, I personally feel like somebody needs to not ignore the PTSD that the Jewish people who are causing this, are perpetrating this atrocity right now, are doing because they have PTSD, and somebody needs to address that and not wave it in their faces right now, where there's not going to be a solution. So, with my overly zealous Jewish relatives, just like you said, Gene, I understand where they're coming from. They can't hear, and they're afraid that everything that's said against Zionism is anti-Semitism. And to say, by definition, this is or isn't anti-Semitism, it's just not that simple. Maybe I said too much, but I think I spoke from the heart.
Thank you, Jane. This is difficult to talk about. I was apprehensive about mentioning it, and yet I felt I had to say something.
It's real.
Other comments, please.
I think Kathy.
Kathy? Hi, Kathy.
Thank you for this. It's helpful to have this talked about, because there's no good place to talk about it right now in my world. And it's been on my mind a lot. And I realize I feel like my hands, the way other people are saying, I feel like my hands are tied behind my back. I live in a community with a lot of Orthodox Jews. You know, the thought went into my head of putting a poster in my yard of against what's happening in Palestine. And I thought, oh my gosh, I don't think it's a good idea. The other thing that's going on that we haven't mentioned is that, I have thought about joining groups that are criticizing Biden for the amount of money that he's given to Netanyahu for this war, even though he is voicing against the war. But right now, I feel like the future of the United States depends on Biden being elected. So I am very hesitant to say anything negative about Biden right now. In fact, I am supporting him as much as I can. And so it feels like there are these binding forces that almost cause us to be paralyzed. And so I think it does take a lot of thought and skill as to how to engage with it. Thank you for the discussion.
Yeah, it's a difficult world right now. And, some Zen communities become very insular and they don't want to know about what's going on out there. And I want to speak of the dangers of that. And having this discussion is difficult, and we have to be able to talk with each other about all the things that we are feeling. Any other comments? We've gone on, but this is... Oh, Jerry, hi.
I want to thank you for having this discussion. When you started this discussion, I heard myself groan. I think I heard it too. But I think it, like Kathy said and other people have said, it's on all of our minds. And there isn't really a good place to talk about it in comfort without causing some sort of upset. And I appreciate Jan's comment on how she stood up for the person, but she didn't necessarily agree. It's nice to have a place to discuss it in, like, a safe place. So thank you.
You're welcome, and Sangha can be a place where we talk together about difficult things, and we don't have to agree with each other at all. But to listen, just to listen to ourselves and to each other, and how do we act appropriately? How do we act with dignity and uprightness in a difficult world? David Ray, do you have somebody else?
No, I was just adjusting the camera.
Okay. Okay, we've gone on a while, but any last comments while we're here?
A tiny comment.
Tiny comment, Jim.
In difficult situations, I want to get out of there. And so I finally came to this, instead of saying evaporate or get away, I finally started saying to myself, how can I make this situation any better?
And, good.
And you, but you brought up something better. What did you say? Now I can't remember it. Because I came to my own conclusion about, instead of running away, what could I do to make the situation better? But there was something better that you said, and I can't think of it right now.
I think what you said was great, but, you know, I would say, how do we act helpfully? And that's complicated when there's people with passionate feelings on all sides. How do we act respectfully to everyone? So I appreciate your supporting the person you were talking about. We have to be able to talk and listen to each other. And that's hard. But I think it's a gift that is possible in Sangha. Not that we have to talk about this stuff all the time, no, but that we are not shutting ourselves up because it's rude to talk about or something. This is what's going on in the world, and it affects all of us. How do we bring our upright, careful, caring response to it?